The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Before we get started, a quick public service announcement from your friends at Dietary Requirements. We need your support to continue doing what we do, so we've launched a brand new initiative called The Spinoff Members. This will support the hiring of more journalists, facilitate the most important and hard-to-fund journalism, and allow you to help us decide the areas of coverage. For more info and to become a member, visit thespinoff.co.nz/members.
Oh, yes.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Welcome to Dietary Requirements, the Spinoff's food podcast where we eat and drink delicious things, try not to chew into the microphone and talk to interesting people about food. Ko Simon Day toko ingoa, and I am your host. Today in the studio with me is the Spinoff's food editor, Alice Neville.
Kia ora.
Food boss, Sophie Gilmore.
Kia ora, Simon.
And Samuel Flynn Scott, food writer and musician.
Kia ora, how's it going?
Did you like the order that I put those in?
I did, it was great.
Food writer first and foremost.
Yeah, are you more of a food writer at the moment?
No.
Which more makes of a musician.
Which makes you more money?
Being a musician.
Does
you,
it?
You must be broke.
Well, he's quite famous.
I write like an article for the Spinoff every 3 weeks or something. If I was making more off that than my, you know, 70 hours a week I'd spend making music, I'd be in big trouble.
Yeah, so would the Spinoff.
Yeah, it
so
would be time spin-off. To quit your day job.
Yeah.
And some special news before we get into the podcast properly. Last week at the New Zealand Food Media Awards, Dietary Requirements was awarded the best food broadcast. And we're very flattered, humbled and stoked.
Woohoo.
Yay.
Yeah. We're also surprised. Guys. I mean, I might be speaking for myself, but... I was surprised. I'm stoked.
Well, I just don't know of many food broadcasts. So.
Yeah,
yeah, the competition maybe wasn't that tough.
So I know of Honeycomb, which is a really cool food podcast out of Wellington.
Yeah, I listened to that one.
And Kate Underwood, who was a nominee for the best food broadcast. That was based on her appearing on that. So I think we're the best of not many, you know?
Yeah, right. We'll take it. Do you know what I think, though, is that the New Zealand Food Media Awards were quite a big deal. I hadn't realised the judging process was very robust. I was run through it by one of the judges.
They had
to listen to, like, all of our podcasts and then provide feedback and then, you know...
That's why our listenership is up 25%.
Yeah, yeah, from the judges. Anyway,
now, I entered
cool.
like three of them, I think.
And one, two. Alice Neville.
No, best, I entered three.
Best feature writer.
Best food feature writer. Congratulations.
Equal with Nikki Bazant.
Shot Nikki.
Hey, what did you submit for your best food feature?
God, I think I put in three, and they ought to be from 2018, which was a long time ago. I think one was the Monique Fiesel piece.
Very great profile,
one was
very
the
great
show. Karina and Casey story. That was my first story for the spin-off.
Oh, I remember
we even
that.
Had a food section. And then I think I entered a story I'd done for Life and Leisure magazine about the Hauraki salt men.
Oh, yeah. Well, everyone should jump on and read them because Alice was the winner.
We wouldn't have won Best Food Broadcast, and we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for our wonderful sponsors, Freedom Farms. Freedom Farms believes that everyone who eats meat has a responsibility to know how that animal has been raised, and they're dedicated to providing you with the best pork and free-range eggs. Buy their bacon and buy their eggs, and if they're not in the supermarket, ask the supermarket to get them. So last month, Alice and I spent a lot of time in the capital at Visa Wellington on a Plate, the city's annual food festival. I was super impressed.
Yes, I was impressed. It's my hometown, so, you know.
But I'd never been to Wellington on a Plate before.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool event.
It was the first time they'd done it for an entire month.
It's absolutely hectic, isn't it?
It's really full on. And the range of stuff that they do, whether it's like a scone-making session all the way up to the amazing international chef collaborations that they do was quite impressive. Mm-hmm. And I love the way that the city gets into it and all the restaurants get into it as well.
It's wicked, and people have got so into it that it started to have, like, they need to bring constraints into it to stop people going around trying to eat 50 burgers in 2 weeks by sharing one
five
between
people,
four.
Yeah,
and,
share one.
Yeah, yeah.
So in memory of 2019 Wellington on a Plate, that's definitely fair. In memory of Wellington on a Plate, we are speaking about Wellington's food scene this episode, and that's why we've enlisted one of Wellington's favourite sons, Samuel. Thank you for joining us, and thank you, Wellington, for having me. I had a very good time in August.
Yes, kia ora, Wellington.
I'd actually quite like to move to Wellington for the entire month and just
eat,
hang out and eat.
Yeah, I'd be so down for that. I think we actually should do that next
year. Yeah, we might need a sponsor, though.
I think we'll get Visa to do that.
Yeah. I mean, Visa will be interested in that.
Are you listening, Visa?
You've got money.
They're always listening.
I doubt Visa are listening.
They're like listening through Siri.
You're going to get served things on Facebook now, Visa ads.
I have to say, because I chaired in a talk last year with Monique and Morgan McGlone, and it was very, I didn't get paid very much money, but then Visa afterwards were like, thank you so much for doing that, and then gave me this like really fancy bowl, like, sort of $350 bit of handmade New Zealand pottery. And I was like, this is great. Thanks, Visa. Then I kind of thought, could have just paid.
Hosting panels, though, is even less lucrative than writing for the spin-off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
it was fun, though. I mean, Monique and Morgan.
Good duo.
Good yarners.
Did you make it down this year for anything, Sam?
I was there in the midst of it for some gig or
Neil
something.
Young?
No, it wasn't for Neil Young. Oh, no, I DJ'd a Wellington on a Plate event.
Oh, cool.
That's right. Wasn't it the
wine rave?
Yeah.
There was one person who complained that I wasn't playing actual rave music.
Oh, right.
But no one really, I don't think anyone else thought it was an actual rave.
Can you just run me through what, in fact, a wine rave is?
It just was like a crazy natural wine piss up. And in about 10 minutes, it like started at 8. By like 10 past 8, lots of people were dancing and seemingly drunk.
Wow, that's almost like when you go to those parties where they only have cocktails, you know, like spirits, and everyone's just cool, and then just whoosh, everyone's
like
hammered.
The Metro Restaurant of the Year Awards.
What are you spinning at a wine rave?
Well, I just play what I always DJ, which is a mix of like 80s bangers and then like African kind of disco and things like that,
sounds
sort of
ideal.
70s African disco and, you know, Turkish funk and things like that. This weird thing that happens to musicians when you get bored of music is you just start listening to genres that sound like they're made up. So like, you know, Filipino psych rock
Turkish
and things like
funk.
That.
Turkish funk, you know. Next time someone asks me what sort of music I'm vibing at the moment, I'm going to say
Turkish funk.
It's like,
I'm mainly getting pretty deep into some Turkish funk this month.
Well, these things, these genres exist and, you know, they just...
They deserve airtime too.
Yeah.
Yeah, good on you.
And you just get sick of music that you, I don't know, get sick of music.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're not here to talk about music.
I wrote a story about why I love Wellington's food, and it came with a cheeky headline that suggested that, well, no, it said that Wellington's food scene is the best food city. Wellington is the best food city in the world. And it worked in terms of inspiring a response. And it was quite hostile from some quarters, which I thought was interesting because it showed, one, they didn't actually read it where I explained why I love Wellington's food scene so much. But two, it is such a impassioned idea, this thing that a city represents a food scene and that people are really either committed to what they believe is the best or what they believe their city is. So what is Wellington's food? What do we think is great about Wellington's food, and what is special and different about it?
Well, a bit of a throwaway quote of mine sort of became like the centre of a bit of a rebuttal think piece in the spin-off after that, so I'm going to be careful about what I say today. But I think that Wellington's, it's really one of those cities that we love going out because the weather is shit and we just like being in restaurants and having something to feel proud about.
And just shelter.
Just shelter, yeah. But, you know, and also just like we can do something good despite, you know, the fact that it's a bit windy and rainy or whatever. And it did really explode, I think, before other New Zealand cities and when New Zealand had no cuisine at all. So you had people like Peter Gordon, you know, the first Sugar Club was in Wellington, this tiny little place. Really, it was a really cool dining room. And you know, Martin Bosley and so a few chefs, and then Kelda, she learnt from that woman who was in
Lois Daish.
Yeah, so Lois was great.
Yeah, she's a legend.
Amazing food. I put the like Brooklyn Deli or somewhere, was it? Or Brooklyn
Mount
Bar and
Cook
Grill?
Cafe.
Oh, Mount Cook Cafe as well. Yeah, Mount Cook Cafe. I remember that when I was really young going there and getting the huge burger when, you know, I don't know. There was good food in Wellington when there was no food seen in New Zealand. And so I think it's ebbed and flowed, and sometimes Auckland feels like there's way more going on in Auckland, and it sort of, as there should be, it's a much bigger city. But then Wellington gets a bit miffed, and then we try to really push ourselves. And
whether it's coffee or then beer or bread or, you know, that was something that people really got stuck into me about, was one thing I really love about Wellington is these two places that I go to get toast.
Oh, yeah.
And,
well, customs.
Customs and where customs gets their bread from, which is Wellington sourdough. They've got a cafe called Starter. And I was criticized for writing about for having written about a beautiful food scene and referencing toast, but it's such beautiful bread, and the way they treat it is with utmost respect. And is there anything more Kiwi than toast?
Like, I don't understand that at all. I think toast really deserves its moment.
Yeah. I agree.
And I think for Wellington is all about cafes for me. And it's always been, had a good cafe scene long before Auckland did. And when I moved up to Auckland, like 2006, 2007, having worked in cafes down there, and it's been kind of my life, I was bereft. I was shit up here. And so I think it's caught up now, but
I still think Auckland's cafe scene is about being seen, though, as well. Like,
I moved up here and worked at Bambina in like the mid 2000s, and that was
Benediction, and Diesengoff, and that was probably, there was one called Strawberry Alarm Clock in Parnell, which I remember being quite famous at the time.
Just Diesengoff
was one of the first good ones.
Fucking cups,
I reckon.
Yeah, Diesengoff's always been quite good.
Yeah, I wonder if it's got something to do with the geography of Wellington as well. Like, you can literally walk everywhere.
Yeah, it definitely does.
What do you call that quarter, that lower cubist, or middle Cuba Street?
If you're talking about sort of, you know, Willow Street, Cuba Street, Tory Street, all the way from Mount Vic basically to the Outer Valley, then it's Te Aro.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different suburbs.
Oh, heading into Te Aro today, you know.
No, there's different areas. You go to, you're going to Cuba Street or you're going to... Yeah.
But that sort of big block of restaurants where you've got those alleyways.
Well, it's quite new.
It's quite new, yeah.
Because that is so much fun to just stumble around and go in anywhere and it's good.
Oh, yeah, you've got Fix and Fog, you've got the Chocolate Company, you've got the Lead Street Bakery, you've got Shepherd.
Goldings.
You've got Pizza Pomodoro, which was the first one in that zone.
Yeah.
It's a good time to talk about Wellington hipsters, isn't it? Those laneways, absolutely full of them.
Well, yeah, and that hipster thing is something that I think before the term hipster existed, Wellington was... Yeah. Full of people with that kind of attitude of like, I want to have the best thing.
Yeah.
I want to travel to San Francisco and have this thing that's the best thing and then bring it back to Wellington and do my own version.
Yeah. And I think that's cool that Wellingtonians are perhaps more parochial than Aucklanders. Like, they really want to contribute to their own scene. And the people that I know that are really good at what they do in hospitality down there are very proud Wellingtonians and intentionally contributing to that community.
Yeah, and it gets a bit tedious when you're a Wellingtonian who's left, because some of them are just like, would not hear a word against the place. God, like, the weather's not bad. And it's like, you've got to admit the weather's bad. Like, it's a great city. They're like, no.
Yeah, but let's be honest, the last 31 days in Auckland, there's been 29 days of rain.
Yeah.
I thought it was all 31. It rained every day in August.
Oh, I read something that said 29 out of 31, but it was a lot of rain. It's been so wet. And Wellington winters are actually nicer than Auckland winters. Because they're colder, but they're like crisp and clear. And
no, it's just fucking windy, man. Like horizontal
rain. No, spring's
rain.
When all the wind starts.
Look, I lived there for 18 years.
What I also think Wellington
for 40,
does.
40 years.
All right.
What I also think Wellington does really well is collaborate within its community. And yes, there are some rivalries, and I heard some really good stories that are unshareable, but there seems to be this desire to work together across different places within different sectors of the hospitality industry, and that really helps elevate the entire scene to a sum that is greater than its parts.
I think it's so small and everyone's friends and it's just a nice little vibe, if you will.
It kind of feels like a good incubator in the sense that I guess people say the New Zealand market full stop is a really good test market. If you can make it here, you can probably make it anywhere. Like, you go to a food mecca like New York or London and it's 80% rubbish and 20% amazing.
Oh, do you reckon?
Oh, I just like the absolute like mediocrity and how it thrives in London and stuff just drives me wild. Like,
there's
New
cities
York.
where Starbucks and Pret a Manger can thrive.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
that's
like,
true.
I love
yeah.
Pret.
Franchise of any kind that doesn't even seem to need to be good. Well, whereas I think in Wellington and in Auckland as well, the strong ones are surviving because we just don't have the population. And obviously, that's got a whole lot of problems that are associated with it as well. And I'm a massive advocate for limiting licenses on just constantly opening cafes and restaurants.
Yeah.
But I think that the result of that is that the base level has been lifted and only the strong ones do survive.
Which, well, and this is something that I think it was David Chang and Rene Redzepi thing, I think it was those two, I can't remember who, it was someone talking to David Chang, talking about how at the moment diners have the best they've ever had in the world. And it really goes for Wellington. Like, you know, you can go to, what's it called, Calder's place?
Rita,
sorry, yeah. I had the address in my head, but I couldn't remember the name of the restaurant. and so you go to Rita and, you know, it's, what, $65 or something for the three courses? And it's
good value.
It's incredibly, I don't know, the night I went, it was just incredibly good food. And I got all the additions and stuff and it cost heaps more and bought nice wine. But still, I think that for what you're getting, this tiny restaurant where you've got so many chefs just making sure that everything is perfect and all the food is, all the ingredients is absolutely the best and sourced locally. And I don't know how they can survive. And there are so many, there are just so many restaurants in Wellington. It's crazy. I mean, there was that article recently in the Dominion Post by David Burton, which was pretty intense.
Grim.
It's grim.
And I think that maybe it's the redefinition of success, right? Because, yes, you need profit. That's kind of oxygen to keep you afloat. But those people that are doing all the things that you just said and still charging that price, I can tell you right now, they're not making money.
Yeah.
You know? So they're doing it because they love it. They're doing
it because
they've got
passionate teams.
Well, I guess
Paul and Calder have the cookbook as well. And,
yeah, and they've had to go find other revenue streams. And they
probably
really
made a bomb from selling Nico.
They probably, I sure hope so, because that place was exceptional for such a long time. I used to say the best fine dining in New Zealand is when you get lunch at Nico, because the food was that good. You'd get a bowl of, you know, chicken soup with ricotta dumplings, and it would just be
so delicious
than anything you'd get in any restaurant.
Alice is drinking water, listeners. This is crazy.
I know. Shall we pop one of our Wellington beers?
Well, we've got a vast array of Wellington beers because it's something the city's famous for. We've just
this is going to be a 6-hour podcast.
Yeah.
We're prone. We're
pretty
that.
Quick drinkers. We've
just had a
Kuro,
which is
it's a Japanese black and a Japanese-inspired black lager from Garage Project. It's one of the ones they've just released as part of Wellington on a plate, as part of Burger Wellington. I don't know much about it. I just bought it.
Well, I really liked it because it was as rich as a Guinness without feeling like a meal.
Yeah.
It was really refreshing.
It must have been...
I think Guinness is, in fact, a black lager.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
By definition.
It must have been to go with a certain burger. I'll Google it and see.
Well, I think they make the beers and then you design the burgers to go with them.
It became, I actually became a fan of Guinness, which surprised me when I was in Ireland.
Oh, it's so good.
It's really, it's as if you couldn't see it and you were just drinking it, it could be lager almost over there. Like, it's not weighty and heavy and it's not the things that we think it is. It's kind of got, they've got all these really particular rules about how you pull it, but, you know, it's so aerated that it just...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so delicious.
What are we drinking next, Ellis?
Well, should we try the fresh September, fresh off the bloody whatever you brew beer with, which I know because I...
Brewed beer before? Let's do it. Is that the one in Fermenter. The flagoon?
Yes, the one in the flagoon, as you called it. Or growler, if you will.
Where did you get it?
Garage Project on Tap Room in Kingsland.
Oh, nice.
So they've been doing a different fresh IPA every month for...
Can you run me through what fresh means in that context?
Well, it's quite confusing, as it often is, but it's a hazy, unfiltered beer, I think, as is the trend.
I think in this context it means they want people to drink it fresh.
Yeah.
They make it quite quickly and they don't want it to hang around. And it does change. They tend to change quite a lot through the month. If they've got a bit of hop burn, which, you know, they're so hoppy, they sometimes can. They tend to chill out by the end of the month. And then,
what is hop burn? Is that my heartburn after having a beer that's too hoppy?
Well, it feels a little bit like that. So if you ever drink a really, you get it a lot, especially I find with like newer breweries, where they just make a crazy hoppy beer and you have a sip and it just slightly burns your sort of where your tonsils are. It just kind of feels like a little burning sensation. So let's see if this one has hop burn. Let's judge it right now.
So this is the natural wine of beer. Is that what we're saying?
Well, oh, no. Natural wine of beer would be wild ferment beers.
Okay. Why is it cloudy then?
Well, it's unfiltered and it's a sort of style at the moment to make hazy
IPAs. They use a special strain of yeast which came out of the east coast of the States, which stays suspended.
Yeah.
It doesn't...
What's suspended?
So
doesn't float to the bottom.
It doesn't float to the bottom. So the yeast is just staying through the whole beer as opposed to
this one actually is using beer from a new company called Froth Technologies, which is New Zealand's first beer beer yeast lab that's just been crowdfunding on TradeMe. What is it? PledgeMe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tastes
and
good.
This is one of the first beers that use this yeast developed by these guys in Wellington.
See, and that's, again, what I think is so cool
in
about
Wellington. Of course.
Ooh. Yeah.
Is that, you know, I used to drink beer like I drank wine, and I'd be looking for whatever was $18 down to $12. And now I'm much more interested in having six less beers and having six better beers because of that. And
you don't ever want to just get a dozen Flames?
I still...
I would not put that past Simon Day.
Flames
depends
have
what's on special.
I have a soft spot for Flames, but
I've got a soft spot for Flames too, which is actually a lesion in my stomach
from drinking.
Mine is
a direct result of drinking.
Mine is a hole in my brain.
Yeah,
yours is from Double Brown in Dunedin.
No, Flame in Dunedin as well, 5.9%. But Wellington has shown me
that it's yum.
Beverage juicy. Can be better than you know, and I've really enjoyed learning heaps about beer and testing my limits with beer.
I think the subject matter of this podcast, the title, should be a love letter to Wellington from Simon Day.
I think if I
he's already done
he's got
it.
The horn.
I'd
get attacked again.
Yeah. Which, you know, would be quite funny, but maybe not for you.
No, that actually didn't bother me. No. It's like losers on Twitter, so it's fine.
I don't want to know why anyone would care. It's obviously just like an angle. And, you know, like...
People did Wellington. Get very het up about it, weirdly.
But I think that shows why it's so important.
Well, like, people are so passionate about the food that they like, right? If they've got a thing that they think is the best thing, then they just think, even though I haven't tried anything else, this must be the best thing.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, does that, just fills my heart. And it's the same with, like, the music from when you're 15 or whatever.
Yeah.
You think that nothing else could possibly be as good.
Sam, what are things that you can get in Wellington that you can't get in Auckland?
Well, I used to think it was Malaysian food, but I've been... on such a journey to find Malaysian food in Auckland, and I keep finding really good stuff.
Yeah,
so.
There's a lot of good Malaysian.
But I think Wellington, it's like, it's so much more in your face. You know, you go down Gurzny Street and there's like Malaysian place, Malaysian place, Malaysian place. So I think that, and it's, there are really authentic places in Wellington that are fantastic, but there are also places which do a specific Wellington type of Malaysian. And I've written about this for the spinoff as well. And I think that's, that's really a specific Wellington cuisine, which is a, you know, just a roti chennai, which we spell with an H and call it chennai for some reason. And the The curry's just a bit more, it's just milder and it's just a bit more plain.
Do you think it's been adapted?
I think it's been adapted for students. And they used to be like $4. When I was at university, it was like $4 for 2 pieces of roti bread and a bowl of chicken curry.
Yum.
With the big chunks of agria potatoes and they're soaking up all the juices. And I don't know, I think that's a particular Wellington thing.
Yeah.
There are things in Wellington that you can get which are from other cities which you can't get around New Zealand just because we've got those hipster types who want to bring things back. And I think Customs Toast is a big example of that because it really comes from the San Francisco crazy toast and coconut water movement. I shouldn't say crazy, but the just this unique thing. There's a whole backstory about the cinnamon toast movement in San Fran, which is actually a beautiful story about this woman coping with her own mental illness through opening this cafe that just sold cinnamon toast and coconut water.
Yeah,
and it's
the coconut water part.
But
this is really
another
gross.
Thing that I think Wellington does that no one else does really well is Pomodoro's pizza and Golding's, like the beer and
combo,
pizza and just
Again, that's quite a San Francisco thing, being like, this is a bar, we don't do awesome food, but you can go get the good food from somewhere else and bring it here.
You don't even have to go there anymore. It comes just to the bar. Like, it's so good.
Yeah, I liked that when you could do that at Mea Culpa and
Rincon.
Oh, yeah, Rincon on Ponsonby Road, and that was hugely popular.
Yeah.
It just means both places are twice as busy.
Yeah, it works for everyone.
Yeah.
It is a really good idea. Well, there's a whole lot of sort of the casual sort of someone throwing something together and making things work element to Wellington bars. And I also think to Christchurch bars and Dunedin bars. And in Auckland, you don't get that so much because things need so much more investment here because you need to sign on to these long leases and get, you know, investment in the fit out so that you sort of fit in with everything else.
You end up with fucking places that look like fake libraries and in the place of Golden Dawn.
There's actually R.I.P. just Auckland's just pretty terrible on bars. I know there's not loads of them in Wellington, but the ones that there are, I think, are better than what
so
we have
much
here.
Better. Yeah, I think that's something Wellington
and they,
does
there's
better.
A very strong cocktail scene in Wellington
as well.
Yes, there
is. Yes.
Havana.
I wrote a story about that once.
I had one of the coolest nights of my life at Havana during Cuba Dupa Festival. I was just happened to be in there. As this band that had come over from New Orleans arrived to get beers and have a, you know, enjoy their night. And a guy just pulls a trombone out from behind the bar that just must have been, you know, where the glasses are, hands it to this black guy and goes, "Join the band." And suddenly this guy from New Orleans had been handed a trombone. And
so the bartender knew he was the trombone player. He had some vibe on it or something.
He must have seen it or he must have just racially profiled him. And
I feel like they had a conversation.
But he just handed him a trombone and he walked into the band. And
that's very Havana bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the sort of story that kind of annoys people, I think, in Auckland. They're just like, oh, pathetic, disgusting Wellington kind of groovy vibes.
Oh, I got so much hate when I moved up to Auckland from Wellington. I mean, there was one major problem in that I had dreadlocks, so I was deserved to be roasted.
In case none of you have ever met Alice, she shouldn't be wearing dreadlocks.
It's a different time.
She's slight and blonde, place. So it would have been a strong look.
Bold. I wasn't blonde back then.
Oh.
You would have looked like that... that guy in the Bomb Funk MCs video clip.
I kind of did.
What a time.
To be fair.
And which is another thing that I really love about Wellington on a plate. We talked about how hard it is to survive in cities in New Zealand because it's such a small population. There's so many good things happening. And the festival was born 11 years ago?
Yeah, I think so.
Out of a desire to increase the patronage for these restaurants during the literally coldest, darkest period of the year, August.
It's absolutely genius.
Well, now though, it's the busiest time of the year.
The second busiest time of year after December.
Yeah, but still so many people that whinge and moan about it. That, you know, last year there was so much grief about the burger thing taking over from the meal thing. And so they've put them at different times now. But other people are saying, well, it was actually much better when the burger thing was happening because people actually really only care about the burger thing and it created so much
more. So I spoke to a couple of chefs while I was down there during the month and they'd loved the format from this year.
They'd
sold sort of 200% more of the dine dishes, of the special dishes that they were during the first 2 weeks. And there was like it allowed anticipation to build for the burger half as well.
Yeah.
And I just think there's that really organic local support of Wellington on a Plate, where there is this reason now to get out and try something exciting that these
restaurants
are put on.
Yeah, I was trying to figure it out. I listened to the Honeycomb podcast, and he was interviewing the founder of Wellington on a Plate. And I was thinking, I wonder what the critical mass is that they've achieved. Like, they've made enough people give a shit about it that it's a vibe.
It's definitely a vibe. It overwhelms them. Like,
totally.
Some restaurants.
But we do well in Auckland with the Writers' Festival and the film festivals. Well, why can't we do... Like, we had Restaurant Month up here. I think it was simultaneous to Wellington on a Plate. And I just felt like...
It was so...
Lacklustre.
I don't know if it was good or not, but there was just no buzz.
There's no visibility.
People barely know it's on. It's quite different down there, I think, in Wellington, where everyone knows it. Even the people, and there's always people in Wellington who are like, oh, yeah, no, Wellington on a Plate is shit. I'm not going to anything.
I was going to say, my personal favourite Wellingtonian is the one that hates Wellington on a Plate.
Well, they're the same people that hate the Sevens and hate World of Wearable Arts. And I might be one of those people.
They don't know how lucky they are.
But anything that happens now that's popular, people are like, Beervana, people are like, it's just Sevens for beer.
My friends World of Wearable Arts for beer. Even with a free ticket to come to Beervana down there.
Beervana is so fun.
Like, it's so fucking fun.
It must be exhausting being so cool. Hating on things. Yeah, being so cool all the time.
Yeah.
It's very Wellington.
It's just normal to them.
Yeah.
But there are always people, there are always chefs that just really knock it out of the park and do something totally amazing. Yeah. And if you don't go, you feel like an idiot.
And it's really ambitious really as well. It's super ambitious. The chefs that they get in from overseas.
The lineup this year was incredible.
This year was nuts, yeah.
I was fed by Nancy Silverton, and then got to show her around the Harbourside Farmers Market.
So envious of that.
I had food dreams completed, and the food was so good.
Yeah.
Mm.
You can read about it on thespinoff.co.nz. That's actually going to retrospectively force me to file the fucking story.
Yeah, I was like, hold on, yet. I haven't seen that story.
So it's going to have to come out before this podcast is released, which is inspiring.
I think I've tried to do that before on this podcast to make myself write something, to be like, read about it, and then I never still
will. I keep on almost mentioning things that I'm currently writing about for Spinoff, and then I think, oh no, I'm not going to mention it because it might take me ages.
Yeah, I'm hoping Alice has forgotten about that.
It's a good idea because then you'll do it.
And the way that she worked with Shepherd, Elliot, and... the sort of knowledge that was shared, and it's so beautiful seeing these chefs work together and these restaurants engage with this team that's coming from overseas.
Seems to be the person that they pair with everyone. He just seems to be so busy.
So they did Eduardo Jordan at Bulcott Street Bistro as well. Yeah. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Bulcott.
And he bumped into Nancy and invited her to his thing, and he went out fishing with, who's the head chef of the bistro?
Rex Morgan,
and they went on a bender, and it was just a beautiful collaborative moment.
That's goals, eh? Being paid to fly around the world, meet other people that love what you love, and have a bender with them.
Chefs have, like, they have the most stressful lifestyle, but they also feed each other, and just, you know, it's great when you go to a restaurant with a chef and get all the free stuff that the chef's getting.
100%.
Hey, guys, speaking of Shepherd, these cookies that I've brought in are from a bakery that he maybe is sold out of, but it was him and his brother Jesse started this place.
How come they're in Auckland?
Fly them up.
Really?
How often?
I don't know.
So they sell them at Red Rabbit
and Parnell. Yeah,
Red Rabbit and Parnell.
That's a great, really salty. That's a great
Leeds Street Bakery.
Which is right next to Goldings.
Next to Goldings and
stuff. And that's sort of like Axis of Evil.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Tina wants some cookie. Can you catch Tina?
Do you want some beer, Tina? Just give it a go. This one just doesn't even taste like beer. It tastes like juice.
It's delicious. Wow, yeah, that cookie's a good time.
So everything that Nancy made that night at Shepherd was incredible, but perhaps the most mind-blowing thing was they took loaves of sourdough from Leeds Street Bakery, sliced it in huge thick slices, and just buried it in garlic-infused olive oil, just soaked it in it.
yeah,
and then pulled it out of the olive oil and then fried it on the grill to kind of trap the oil in there. And then as you bit into it or squished it, it just ran everywhere and it was so delicious. It's
fried bread.
That sounds just, I want to eat that right now.
Yeah, same.
I love about the coffee.
What are the two kinds?
Yeah, so I love these and they have them at People's Coffee in Newtown, which is, you know, one of my local walking the kids
hipster
to school.
Joints.
Hipster joints. Yeah, but I've been going there for like 15 years or something. And it's always been cool and it still seems like it's brand new and cool. This is the gluten-free version. Oh. And I think the gluten-free version is potentially better than the wheat-free version.
Wow.
I haven't
it's
tried
soft.
It yet.
It's like corn. It's sort of like got this cornmeal sort of taste.
So when you say they fly them up, is that on a weekly basis or like twice a week?
They're I assume it's at least twice a week.
I love that.
That's a good gluten-free cookie, right?
I'm yet to try it. Hold
There's
on.
A certain very cool Auckland bakery which does some things extremely well and some things gross.
Yeah.
And they do a gluten-free cookie and it's disgusting.
Oh, really?
It's like disgusting.
I went there today and had a delicious ham and cheese croissant, if I'm talking about the right place.
Yeah, but you surely are, because the ham and cheese croissant is fantastic.
Although it's not warmed up. It's not an option that's offered to you.
It's weird.
Yeah, I prefer the non-gluten-free, if I'm honest.
Same. I prefer the gluten-free. It's like chewier and squishier.
It's
and
pretty good.
It's more like cake, which is often the case
and
with
gluten-free.
And more
powdery, but I like the chewiness of the non-GM.
Yum!
It's definitely like if you got the gluten-free cookie and no one told you it was gluten-free, you'd just be like, yummy cookie.
Totally.
It's not the case for a lot of GF.
It goes really well with the beer as
well. It does. Do you guys want to top up or do you want to try something else?
Can we try the turbine?
Can we try something else? Because you can put the seal back on
that one. By Wellington's wind farm, so that would kind of be...
I think it's just going to be like a pale ale that might not blow our mind, but there's nothing wrong with a simple pale ale.
What's... Oh, turbine. It's Garage Project as well. Are these all Garage Project?
No, we have some Tuatara.
And some Tuatara.
Have you finished that story, Alice?
What was my story?
On Tuatara.
The Tuatara story.
Oh, yeah, fuck. Working on it.
Is this a heavy story?
No, it's
just a story that was due months ago.
I flew down to Wellington with Tuatara in like May, and I still haven't written the story. I'm really sorry. I don't know. I'm lazy.
No, also, their beer is a bit uninspiring these days.
Well, actually,
it used to be so good.
It's got better in recent months, and we should actually try that hazy because it's pretty good.
Because
there's something about being pregnant that makes you like sweet things more. I think it's because my body's in shock that there's no wine.
I've really found that
as well.
During Millie's pregnancies, I've craved a lot of more sweet things.
You're like David, yes, all the symptoms.
You. I made a ice cream sundae the other day with hokey pokey. Toasted almonds and Reese's chocolate sauce, the ones that goes hard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, great. I love that sort of sauce.
It was very nostalgic.
Sounds good.
You can make that sauce just by melting chocolate and adding coconut oil.
Sounds really? Like too much effort.
And that makes it harden?
That makes it stay soft at room temperature.
Oh.
So you just melt it in a, you know, bain-marie.
Mm-hmm.
Add, apparently, doesn't really matter how much cocoa oil you add, don't add too much, maybe like half the amount of chocolate.
Yeah.
And then that will keep it soft at room temperature and runny, hopefully. And then you, when you pour it on ice cream, it instantly hardens because it's not keeping it runny enough.
Okay.
It'll not be hard when it's cold.
Hmm.
And that's how you make choc top.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're not even in the tip section of the podcast. Right, well, lucky readers.
Should we segue into the tip section now, or is that planned for later, Simon?
I think I'm ready. I'm ready to move in.
I'd like to just quickly pause on something before we move to that. Simon, I think you had a revelation with Nancy Silverton when you were in Wellington.
Should we go there now? I was going to use that as a sign-off, but we can go there now. Seeing as
I'm just keen to go there.
So Sophie, Alice and I have an ongoing dispute.
And it's like us... and the world versus you, basically.
Yeah, so that's more accurate.
I believe fresh pasta is... I believed.
Thank you.
That fresh pasta was always superior to dried pasta. That dried pasta was the sort of...
poor cousin.
Exactly, of freshly made pasta. And then I spoke to Nancy about it. She cooked me two pasta dishes with dried pasta that she'd brought over from Italy. And... they were exquisite. The pasta itself was so delicious. And I talked to her about it, and she sent me this message. Tina, you might have to regulate the sound. We'll see what happens.
Okay. Hello, Sophie and Ellis. Just letting you know that Simon was wrong, dead wrong, about dried pasta versus fresh pasta. They're both great.
I'm sorry, girls. My bad.
I'm over the moon.
That's great. I mean, I'm not surprised in the slightest. But
no.
You can't argue with her. She's like,
no. Her voice is amazing.
She was so cool. So that was just after we'd got back to her hotel after spending two hours at the farmer's market.
Right. Smelly Norbert's.
No, that's my food crush is always Stefania.
Oh, yeah.
So Nancy was safe. 2 hours at the farmer's market, you know, in one of those Wellington mornings. It was beautifully clear with the most howling gale, and it was so cold. She had so much fun, and just tears were streaming down her face and snot coming out of her nose the whole time.
All been there.
But
cheers to you, Wellington.
I have to acknowledge
what you guys
I was
are talking
wrong.
About.
I am so happy, A, that you were wrong, but I knew that anyway. But mainly I'm happy because...
you were right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very happy that I was right. But that you've been corrected and you've been you've tasted the pasta and you've made the decision. Because I'm also insulted. We did the same exact experiment with Simon in the studio. Mm. I made him cacio e pepe. He ate it, said it was nice, but he thought it would have been better with fresh pasta. So it took Nancy to change his mind, but we'll take it.
I think like anything that involves like a penne should definitely be dried. I mean, who's going to make fresh penne? What a nightmare. And I think like spaghetti in general, I think things like a vongole or, you know,
cacio e pepe.
Just
absolutely
like better. Because you want
that bite.
You want that. And it tastes good. It tastes delicious.
The rough texture on the outside means that the sauce sticks to it. Yeah.
And even hot tip, even just like the La Molasina from
Faro. That shit is good.
I've been buying that.
Yeah, it's good.
They do linguine.
It's good. They do all the ones and they're all good.
They're really good.
Another hot tip, go to Wellington. It's half the price of More Wilson's.
Is it?
Is
that's the one thing that Auckland's missing, isn't it? More Wilsons.
We could almost do a whole episode on how much Wellingtonians love More Wilsons.
I love More Wilsons so much. And you know what drives me insane? You can go to More Wilsons and you can buy Massimo's mozzarella, but the slightly drier one that comes in a tube, and so you can peel long bits to go on pizza, it's $20 for a kilo.
Whoa!
Yeah. You buy perfect Italiano mozzarella, which is as close to mozzarella as like Colby,
yeah,
and that's like $28 a kilo from Countdown. You go to Faro to buy mozzarella and forget about it. Yeah, you can't even buy pizza
appropriate.
Forget about it.
Priced out of the market.
You can't even buy pizza appropriate mozz.
What? That's the actual fuck.
I know.
Yeah, well,
that's a New Zealand brand. Why don't they stock it in Auckland? Sorry, I'm going to keep interrupting everyone.
Massimo's, because isn't that...
Massimo's is in Auckland. You can get that New World.
Yeah, you can get
the one that's in water.
Yeah,
so you can get the wet one. But you put that on a pizza in a home oven, you're going to have a soup, sort of milky soup.
Yeah, it's wet.
You need to cook, you're going to cook fresh mozzarella, you need a 600 degree wood fired oven and an Italian man making your pizza.
Oh, yeah. Delicious.
Or Nancy Silverton. Very, very good pizzas.
Yes, I went to Osteria Mozza last year in LA and. God, like you said, everything from the bread and olive oil through to the pasta, and then we shared a pizza. It was just, I guess it's just the perfect version of that particular dish.
She probably makes her own mozzarella.
Probably.
Mm.
That was the inspiration for those restaurants, as she went to a mozzarella bar in Umbria, where all they did was serve mozzarella with different condiments, and she's like, this is a dream. And so now that's when she works at her restaurants, that is where she most likes to be, is putting the plates together for the mozzarella bar where you can sit there and talk to her.
Cool.
Wicked.
Maybe I do need to upgrade Stefania to Nancy.
Oh, my God. Hey, what do you guys think of the turbine? It's quite hard going from the fresh to the turbine. But
I think the turbine is a welcome addition to the Garage Project staple of everyday beers.
Yeah, I do too, because they... you know, I drink a lot of Harpy Days, and it's good to have another.
Well, it's the same style as the Harpy Days, but I think it's got a nicer hop base to me.
I could have more of these than the Harpy Days.
Yeah.
It's because Harpy Days has got that Rewaka hop, very diesel-y.
This is slightly, like,
don't be anti-Rewaka. Stinky. It's pretty much my Tūranga Waiwai.
Really? I'm sorry.
What is?
Rewaka.
I just overdosed. I've just overdosed on that particular
hop. Well, actually, Upper Moteri is where my family's from.
Well, it's a great, great part of the country. Newdorf wines.
Can you get the funk on that, though, on the nose?
No,
it smells a bit funky to me.
Could be the glass.
A little bit.
Keeping in mind I have complete, what's the pregnancy nose? It's like extremely...
It's big nose.
I think they call it pregnancy big nose.
Pregnancy big nose.
You should go. You should go and try and find some truffles.
Oh my god!
Oh yeah.
Just like
I reckon I'd be all over it.
Round in a field.
Yeah. When's truffle season, guys? Because this is I said I wanted to come on your podcast during truffle season, and we'd just make a whole bunch of dishes and get like $100 worth of truffle and just eat them all.
Oh
with
yeah.
Microphones.
Can we do that?
You're allowed to come back.
I'll fly back in March.
I would like to go down to North Canberra.
So you're moving back. You're going back to Wellington.
I'm going back to Wellington because of the toast.
Yeah. Got to get to People's Coffee.
People's Coffee.
Where the mozzarella is $20 a kilo.
Yeah.
Let us talk to Cook's Corner and recommend some tips for our loyal listeners.
I banned saying talk to when you mean talk about something.
Oh, sure. Let us move to Cook's Corner.
Yeah.
Much better.
It's a metaphor.
Let's begin with our guest. Sam, do you have a tip for us, a cooking tip?
I do, and I learned this from a person who makes natural wine memes. I don't know him personally. It's from his...
What a legend.
He sounds like he makes less money than a food writer.
He does also now make natural wine. So he's gone from making memes and T-shirts to actually making wine.
Wow, that's ironic.
And he's got a... Vivulis is his second name. I can't remember his first name.
Doesn't matter with a name like that.
But he's got a wine podcast as well with Marissa Ross, who's the wine writer for Bon Appetit, and they talk about natural wine. But anyway, he recommended in one of his Instagram stories that you reheat pizza cheese down in a cold frying pan, bring it up to heat in like a non-stick pan or something. I think I've done it in a cast iron as well. And it is so good. Mm. It makes something... better than pizza.
I'm with you.
That might be life-changing.
That just makes everything make sense, because to put a whole piece of pizza in the oven to heat it is to treat the cheese the same as the crust, and they're just different. Yeah. They require different things.
Yeah,
they?
You're going to get a really dry piece of pizza too, reheating it in the oven. Yeah. And reheating it in the microwave, obviously, weird,
chewy.
Soggy
bread.
Look, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I do it, and sometimes it's fine.
I think a little bit in the microwave. You just got to really,
very just take the
eat it
cold.
Edge
off.
Yeah, cold pizza's good.
It's,
like
it's
the
better than microwave pizza. Yeah,
like Mick Jagger said, I'm a cold Italian pizza. I could use a lemon squeezer. My favorite Rolling Stones lyric of all time, because it's true.
Yeah.
But no, heat it up, cheese down. The cheese goes all kind of burny, crispy, like a like a Parmesan crisp.
You know, like the bits that run out the side of a cheese toasty inside one of those machines.
Yeah, you get a whole sheath of that.
Yeah, good. That's like the dairy solids, eh?
Yeah.
Just from the fat separate from it.
Because the fat's all kind of separated already, so then the fat becomes the frying medium to turn those solids into a crunchy thing. And then the tomato heats up, steams the base. The base goes all soft. You flip it over right at the end, and the pan's gotten a bit hotter by that stage. You flip it over. Get a little bit of toast on the bottom, a little bit of toasty crust.
Shit.
I'm really into that.
Ooh.
Thank you.
Oh boy.
It's worth buying a Domino's pizza, letting
$5
it go cold overnight.
For a large as well.
And then have
that
for
affordable.
Sunday brunch.
I refuse to pay $5
for a
whole
pizza. Weekend. Yeah, it does seem absurd.
I think we should write about one day.
Something's not right.
Do you know, I've got a friend who loves Domino's. Sorry, I just have to say this. Friend who loves Domino's from Wellington, and he was like, you've got to go get some Domino's. You've forgotten how good it is. This guy's really into food. He's got Jeremy Taylor. He writes about food as well.
Oh, yep.
And so I went and got Domino's, and I thought it was terrible. And I told him I thought it was terrible, and he was like, oh, yeah, but the Domino's is better in Wellington.
Even the Domino's.
It's classic Wellington.
But I think we should write about one day the late
famously
the late 90s, early 2000s pizza wars, when there was like Eagle Boys,
Eagle
Pizza
Boys.
Haven, Pizza Hut, Domino. Like it was just, the market
huge.
Was flooded.
Eagle Boys, lol.
Eagle Boys. Amazing.
Sophie?
That's awesome.
What you got?
Okay, recently I was in Brisbane and I was cooking lunch for some gal pals, and two things I noticed that they didn't know was if you're making a salad that has potato in it, so I was making a Niçoise salad, make sure that you dress the potatoes while they're still hot so that they absorb all the dressing. They kept on saying, why does this taste so amazing? I was like, I wasn't actually that convinced that it did, but I think that it's because the potatoes themselves were very flavourful.
Yeah.
And the other one is that if you need to, you can make a – I was trying to make a zug / salsa verde type thing to put with salmon.
Yeah.
And my friend didn't have any form of electric mixer, whether it was a stick mix or a mini blender or anything, and I really wanted to blitz the oil with it. Anyway, I just chopped and chopped and chopped. She didn't even have a mortar and pestle, and smushed all the chili, smushed all the coriander, and it was absolutely delicious. So – don't be discouraged.
You can just smush a lot of shit together and it's still quite yum.
Yeah, well, the oil, the reason it was kind of successful is that the oil and the chilies, the oil was infused by the ingredients, which is really all that matters. It doesn't need to go bright green.
Yeah. Yum. My tip is from what I learned at the All Taste No Waste dinner as part of Visa Wellington on a Plate, which was Calder Haynes, the aforementioned chef from Rita, and it was a fundraiser for Kibosh, so it was all about, which is a food rescue organisation, so it was all about using things that would otherwise be wasted, and she used carrot tops in a broth, which was delicious, and on the spin-off, we've recently had a recipe for carrot top pesto, so my tip is to buy those lovely bunches of baby carrots with the green tops. Don't bloody throw away the tops. Blend them up, turn them into some sort of delicious pesto or broth.
The tips are useful across a lot of vegetables. I love when I have to thin out my radishes.
Yeah, got to use
the radish tips and garnishing stuff with them.
Yep.
Some things are poisonous, though, right?
But, you know, test it out.
I think potato leaves are not good. And
lilies.
Well, no one's going to try to eat lily leaves.
You've got to be careful with cats and dogs of lilies.
Oh, okay. I think beetroot leaves, isn't there some sort of...
No, song? They're delicious. No, they're
beetroot leaves are good.
Well, what is the one you can't eat?
Rhubarb. Rhubarb leaves, totally poisonous.
Oh, okay, rhubarb leaves.
Give you a sore
tummy. I'm willing to risk
it. But I'm kind of making that up.
Oh, that's my phone plugged in.
And that call...
You've got to answer it on air.
No, we're not.
Come on.
Hey, should we drink this Tuatara Hazy? Because I feel a bit bad that I sort of just...
You should talk... A brand that had flown Alice all the way to Wellington.
I know.
For absolutely no return.
The thing I was going to try and talk about was how many products do come out of Wellington.
Yeah.
Which we're sort of running out of time to do. But, you know, like, I think Whittaker's chocolate is an incredible Wellington product.
I didn't know that until our email chain.
Right, yep.
It's fucking classic Aucklander.
Griffin's biscuits.
Are they?
Well, at least they used to be.
I thought the Griffin's factory was in, like, East Tamaki or something.
Do you know what? There's probably more than one Griffin's factory in New Zealand.
She's like, oh, I drove past a Griffin's factory once.
So my cooking tip is actually an eating tip, and it was taught to me by Nancy Silverton, my friend, Nancy Silverton. It's actually an Italian concept called fare la scappetta, and you can just think about it as scappetta, which is always save a little nugget of bread to mop up your sauce at the end of each dish. And it's a very beautiful Italian custom to have your scappetta.
Yeah, I didn't know that had a name.
To swipe up the
remnants. I love how the Italians do anything and it becomes beautiful. Like, I'm thinking of my hall of residence in Dunedin where people had, like, stacks of white bread and they're putting everything in it. But when Nancy does it.
It wasn't TikTok white bread. It was Lead Street Bakery sourdough soaked in olive oil and garlic and then fried.
Enzo from Scopa and 1154 and the Breslin,
they're both in Wellington.
They're all Wellington things. He told me about that icon. And then at 1154, they do this garlic bread that I truly love. Yeah. I just absolutely love it.
Are they like the buns?
The bun things.
Oh my God, they're so good.
They're so good. And then Eat Lit Food totally dissed them out.
What?
In his review of 1154.
I didn't see that.
The garlic scrolls.
Yeah, they're just magical. They're totally for that, you know.
11:54 is like the concept that's been in my head that I've just desperately wanted someone to do for ages.
Oh no, don't talk about it. I'm gonna do it.
Okay, Simon.
I'm gonna do it in Auckland. I'm gonna open a pasta joint.
You think no one in Auckland's heard of it yet?
No, but no one's thought about doing it until Sophie brought
don't
it
you
up.
Think the Brees,
no, no,
Brees
I've been talking about it for years.
You.
And your friend Stefania is kind of doing it.
No, it's so different. Like, so yeah. different.
Okay, all right.
Pasta core is twice the price, you know? So where is the last place? We've told people how to cook. Now let's tell them where to eat. Where's the last great meal you've had?
Do we want to start with me?
Go on.
Well, that's just going to be the same. The all taste, no waste dinner.
So this waste food was actually delicious.
Who cooked it?
It was Calder Haynes, former owner of Nico.
Oh, right. Sorry, you did just say that.
Chef of Rita. My former boss.
Okay.
Quite scary to work for.
Right. She's intense.
She's intense. She's great.
I've only ever known her socially. I'd consider her a friend.
Yeah.
And I still find her a bit scary.
Yeah, totally.
But she gave me such good advice when I went to San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. She and Paul both know San Fran very well.
Yeah. They both gave me lists and they were like...
What was the highlight of the meal?
Life changing.
The highlight of the meal was... Man, it was all good. We had snapper wing rillettes served on radish. And then we had this thing called... a tick bean leaf, which is like a broad bean, the leaf of the tick bean, tempura, with like this yummy kind of aquafaba dippy thing. It's real good. It was all fucking good. The dessert was a kiwi fruit sherbet bomb made with kiwi fruit that was too soft, and she got some beer from Garage Project that had gone bad. They had to chuck out a whole batch from the Wild Workshop, turned it into a vinegar, and used that in like a syrup on this kiwi fruit sherbet bomb. It was amazing.
Awesome.
Sophie, you're up because you have to go.
Speaking of eat lit food, my sister and I took Albert to Ponsonby Road Bistro because he calls himself a foodie and he's never been there, which is an old favourite. And my lord, the food that evening was just really, really delicious. We had, and don't judge me because I'm pregnant, venison carpaccio and chicken liver pate. And they had these beautiful lamb polpetti, like Italian meatballs, with sitting on lentils and then a whole lot of cheesy, creamy polenta underneath. It was absolutely delicious. Great. Yeah, and I also had some, if anyone's going to Brisbane anytime soon, I stayed at the Khalil Hotel for this conference that I attended recently, and they have a Greek restaurant in-house called Hellenica. And, God, I wish we had more Greek restaurants in Auckland.
That's a huge gap in all of New Zealand, really.
Yeah. It's
wonderful
tragic,
food.
Isn't it? It's so delicious. Simon.
You can leave if you need to, Soph.
Thank you.
I would like to talk about Hiakai. I ate by myself at Monique Fiso's restaurant, and it was so buzzy. I wish I'd taken some LSD because it was like, it was a trip. It was this really weird journey for me through what it was like to be a child in New Zealand. Like, it had these nostalgic references to these experiences that I remember from being a young boy.
I really loved it too.
Oh, God. I
need to go.
I'm going to go by myself when I move back to Wellington.
Yeah, I'll come down and go with you, Sam.
Let's do it.
Okay.
It was so delicious.
That's something I've actually talked to a friend about, that it wasn't necessarily straight up delicious. It was that food art style of food that is like, whoa,
like
where
pasture,
have I gone?
Like pasture.
Yeah, there's a limit to deliciousness. And there are things you can get for $10 that are as delicious as anything you will get at, you know, the French cafe. That's just...
Yeah, like the fatty stick on the side of Nancy Silverton's salty lamb, New Zealand lamb chop, that was fucking delicious.
Yeah.
That was insanely delicious, but it wasn't even the same type of cooking as what Monique was doing.
I would argue that Monique's food was really delicious. For me, it wasn't too... fancy, too many textures, too much of a journey or a challenge.
I think that the thing is, though, you know, I'm assuming it's really delicious, but also for it to then be that expensive and that much of a destination, it has to be more than just delicious, right? It has to
Goodbye,
be
Sophie,
something else.
We love you.
Intriguing.
Bye, Sophie.
Bye, everyone.
Nice to meet you.
You haven't done your
No, I'll do my last supper.
That's what we call it. Mm. You're not dying.
Is it like the last one you've had rather than the last?
So much last supper.
You're about to be crucified.
I heard Jay Rayner on the off-menu podcast yesterday talking about his Last Supper book, and the off-menu podcast is all about picking your favourite meal. It's just too much. It's so meta. Mm. But anyway, the recent thing that I ate that was really good was Madame George, where I went there maybe a year ago, and it was not great. It was quite shit. It wasn't like gross. It was just like, this is so underwhelming and boring. And then we went there because everywhere was full. We couldn't get a table. We had no reservation. It was like Saturday night, 7 o'clock. We were trying to eat on K Road. And then I was like, let's go to Madame George. I heard that recently it's been great. And so we went there. I was quite trepidatious. Our waiter was fantastic. Like, he was awesome. And I feel like I've had heaps of quite terrible, awkward service lately. And to have someone who's super comfortable is great.
Makes such a difference.
And then they brought out this little amuse-bouche. Bouche.
Amuse-bouche. Try harder, please.
Little amuse-bouche. And it was gross. It was shit.
Oh, no.
Like, it was a disaster. Chewy, weird. Now I can't even remember the name of the thing that it is. That's what I'm like today. Risotto ball.
Arancini.
Arancini. Thank you very much. It was like arancini that was just a terrible texture on the smoky sauce that was gross. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a nightmare. But by that stage we were in, we had to do it. And then every other dish that came was totally fantastic. Just as delicious as food can be. There was this chicken dish that was just beautiful, beautiful eggplant. Just think dish after dish that was just like totally knocked it out of the park. And by the end of the meal, I was like, okay, I'm completely convinced this place has found its kind of voice and is now a really excellent restaurant.
Yeah. That's good.
Good on you, Madame George. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Sam. It was really fun.
My pleasure.
Thank you for representing Wellington.
Woo.
Woo. I like food all around New Zealand as well. I'm not too
I like
frugal.
Food all around the world. How do you feel? But I really, really like Wellington.
How do you
food.
Feel about moving back, Sam? Are you looking forward to it?
I'm looking forward to moving back because I will be more rich purely by not living in Auckland.
Yeah, true.
Why are you moving back?
We were just always only ever up here for a couple of years and, you know, got a house and a life down there.
Well, I think you can put on your Twitter bio now that you're the Spin-Off's Wellington food correspondent.
Yeah, great. I actually think it'll be good.
Do I get a stipend just for being...
This is the spin-off we're talking about.
Yeah, so I'll buy your coffee once a month.
Yeah.
Great. So does that mean that you guys can't come to Wellington on a plate next year? Or just
no,
get me to do it all?
We're going to move the entire down. Podcast but you can to still be Wellington.
Should we get an Airbnb? I'll tell Jessica that I'm going off on tour. We'll get an Airbnb and we'll just like go to... It's like
you
fat camp. We'll
just
like host parties and shit. We can have an event.
Mm.
A live food podcast.
Oh, yeah, it'd be cool. With
Auckland in a flat.
Yes.
At Wellington on a plate.
Love it.
I Visa Wellington on a plate. See, I know you're out there, Visa.
Yeah, we know you're listening.
Sarah.
We love you, Visa.
Come at me.
Love you, Sarah. Beth.
Love you, Wellington.
All of you.
Well, love you, Wellington.
Love you, Wellington. Te whanganui a tara.
I'm not going to say I love you, Wellington, because Wellington knows that I love it, and we haven't got that kind of relationship.
I know. Whereas I left it, implicit. And now I feel a bit guilty.
Well, we're going back next year. Yeah. See you soon, Wellington.
Bye, Wellington. Love you. Thanks, Tina.
Love you too, Tina.
Love you, Tina.
Kia ora e te iwi. Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-Off. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spin-Off member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.